Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play dude.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, we're back. A couple extra days between toy departments, but I think I'm feeling fresh and ready to go. You know, like a starter coming into game one of a playoff series.
Yeah, I feel certified fresh.
Certified, yeah, I like it. I'm Derek Madden, he's Matt Kolsky. Yeah, man, Braves getting ready to open up game one here in a second.
Very exciting times.
Should I be concerned for baseball that I was actually unaware that the AL started yesterday?
That's like a really deep and interesting question, actually, because it goes to, you know, do AL fans care about the NL and what is the popularity level of baseball? And I don't think we have time for it.
I'll put it this way. I went I was watching the Falcons last night, and I happened to see the Yankees Rays score in the ticker. And I was like, okay, I'm not going to try, but I'm guessing that means that the A's played yesterday. Will the score of the A's game just come to me through the course of watching TV, being on Twitter, et cetera? And the answer is no. I still don't know who the A's
won
yesterday.
Wait, the A's score didn't come up on the crawl? Or were you just
I'm
not
sure
looking?
It came up. Right, I'm sure it came up on the crawl at some point.
Right.
But I didn't happen to catch it at any point. You know what I mean?
Well,
so I don't know who won the game.
I bet you could guess.
I'm going to guess the A's.
Really?
I get a 50-50 shot. I don't know.
Yeah.
No.
You're wrong.
Did that not happen? I'm wrong?
The Astros
Damn
won.
It. Yeah. Damn it. I guess it was just hope.
Yeah. I mean, you knew the Astros won. If we're honest, you knew the answer.
But I feel like, you know, even 5 years ago, there's no way that division series game would have passed without me at least having absorbed the score somewhere. You know what I mean?
But I mean, wouldn't you, like, you would have, when you say absorbed the score, you mean you would have looked for it, right? I mean,
no, I mean, I would have just found it. Even if I, in the case where I didn't know the game was happening, the result would have gotten to me. You know what I mean?
I don't know if that's true.
I don't, you know, obviously it's a difficult premise because I think 5 years ago, there's no chance I wouldn't have known the game was happening.
Right. That's the thing. 5 years ago, you would have known it was happening. So I don't know that, I'm not sure. Like, that feels more like the luck of when your eyes were drawn to the ticker than anything else. You know what I'm saying?
Somewhat, I guess. I think it's a little bit more just like, wow, they're full on division series games, just like getting by me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I know it's a unprecedentedly crowded sports environment.
Yeah.
You know,
that's part of it.
Coupled with, you know, completely batshit political season.
Boy.
yeah, that's happening. I don't know if you've heard.
I'm aware of it.
So yeah, you know, I mean, there's a lot of things that demand your attention, but it doesn't seem like the best sign for baseball, I guess, at a minimum.
Probably not the best, no.
No. All right. Well, that's probably all the baseball talk you're getting for today.
Yep.
we got a lot of stuff to cover. A lot of things I liked this week. I think some interesting discussions.
Okay.
Do you want to start with the one thing that I didn't think was very good at all?
I'm curious to see what that is.
That would be sneakerheads.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Which is a Netflix show that's fairly self-explanatory. It's a sitcom based on dudes and a girl who really likes sneakers.
It is exactly what you think, based on the name.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't have any, like, particular animus towards this. I just don't think it was very good.
Yeah, let me try to summarize. We've watched a handful of like 30-minute, well, really like 22-minute Netflix things sort of, you know, sight unseen, unknown, under the premise that this could be fun. And some of those things have been shocking in how awful they are, like Hoops, the cartoon, or what was the beer one? Forget it. Who cares what it's called? The beer one.
The beer one. What was that called? That's going to take
something me about Brews or Brews Brothers or I don't know. But those were like upsettingly bad.
Yeah, this isn't bad.
This is not upsettingly bad. It's just, no. It's blah.
You know what it is? This show could be about anything.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
It's really what it is. Oh God, my wacky buddy sitcom. Like,
right.
You know, here's a guy who has a wacky buddy that just gets him into trouble.
Except
he has to extricate himself from that. You know what I mean?
I guess here's the positive thing I would say about this. It's what's the right way to say it? It's diverse. We've seen 1,000 wacky buddy sitcoms. I'm not sure we've ever seen one where all of the lead characters are people of color. So good for them. And I hope I hope people watch it and enjoy it somewhere, but it's not going to be me. Enough.
The moment that lost me, this may have been in the third episode, I don't know, was when, you know, the girl who's kind of the one that's plugged in and knows how to sell stuff.
Right.
Is like, go see this woman, get this pair of sneakers, do not get anything else.
Right.
Get
and then
this
they
pair
get something else.
Yeah. And it's like, and then the guy talks to me like.
It was the second episode. And by then, like, it's already very clear that you don't listen to this dude.
Right.
And yet, he listens to him and gets into a silly situation, which, again, like, that's not special in its mediocrity. It's the exact plot of 1,000 sitcoms before it.
That's right. Well, then that's, I feel like, was part of the problem. It's also,
yes.
It strains credulity. And I understand that you're trying to establish that, like, hey, the other guy's part of it too, because deep down, you know, he lets himself get into trouble and that's how he ruined his life before or whatever.
Right.
But it just, in that particular instance, it just strains credulity to think he'd be like, okay, yeah, let's do that. You've got a good point there.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like,
yep.
It's,
yeah,
it's like,
I mean,
okay,
there's probably...
You guys aren't trying to write this. You know
right.
What I mean?
That's what I was just going to say. There's probably like a clever, creative version of this exact same show, but this just isn't it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's I think, where we're at. It's a little bit lazy.
But
so.
That said, like, if you had fun watching, I don't know, what's a mediocre sitcom? Big Bang Theory? Like, this is kind of that, except people of color who are sneakerheads instead of largely white people who are nerds. You know what I mean? It's fine.
It's fine. And I will say this, if you are into sneakers, they get the lingo, right?
They get the lingo and they get the shoes.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it is shoe porn. There is shoe porn on this show. If you like shoe porn, then maybe you can get something out of this.
Yeah, somebody did their homework, at least, with the shoes.
Well, yeah, you know, I'll say that. Like, it's not it's not a great TV show. It's not, like, spectacularly written. But I would say it's almost certainly written by someone who actually is a sneakerhead.
Yeah, agreed. Or
like,
they definitely hired a bunch.
Yeah, well, it doesn't but it doesn't feel like, you know, someone had this idea and then went out and did a bunch of research and squeezed in some sneaker info. It feels like someone who actually cares about shoes is writing it.
Yeah, I would agree.
I don't know how far that gets you, but, you know.
Yeah, didn't get me very far at all.
wouldn't get far.
All right, let's move on to other stuff, because I do think there are some interesting things. I'm
yes.
going to move. I want to move straight to the Comey rule. Which was two parts on show. The movie version, autobiography, which I'm assuming that no one read. Although a lot of people bought.
I think you just said a very important thing, but you kind of broke up. So could you just repeat the last sentence?
I said it's the story of Jim Comey's autobiography, which no one read, but a lot of people probably bought.
Yeah. The joke we heard the first time, the first part, I think, is the important thing here and why I didn't get a lot out of this, and I'm kind of angry at it.
Oh, interesting. So, because you texted me, have you seen it?
Yep.
Which I was like, yes.
If you had said no,
you know, just to give you an insight, you would have said, don't watch it.
I would have said, I won't be mad at you if you skip to the last 5 minutes of the second part.
Because we try, you know, we try not to talk too much about this stuff before we do the show so that we can write. So, but I always know that, you know, you're going to have a take if you've asked me if I've seen it. And I'm sort of glad that this is your take because I'm kind of on the other side of you than this. I think I know what your complaint's going to be.
Well, here's my first complaint. First and broadest complaint is that why?
Like, why does this exist?
Yep. What was point?
Because it's an all right. I mean, I think why does it exist? I think it's because it's an insane dramatic story. And I think it is coming up to, I mean, look to me and, you know, I think obviously everyone's going to read their own perspective on real life events into whatever it is they're watching. I mean, I'd look at this as a real warning about what it is like when you have this sort of person and sort of idea, you know, with these sort of ideas, or a person who communicates like the way that Trump does at the head of government, and what it means for people who care about institutions. And I think even though, I mean, look, you're obviously getting very much Comey, I think we agree, somewhat unique perspective on these events. I think even within that, you can see that Jim Comey was not the kind of person who was equipped to understand what was happening and what the ramifications of his out or the ramifications of the decisions that he was making, or even what it would take to protect the institutions that he valued so dearly in this kind of environment. And to me, that all of that is interesting and revelatory.
Oh, see, I think that is a very convenient Jim Comey spun version of events. That's what I think.
Jim Comey spun version of events.
No, but what I'm saying is I don't believe you, dog. I don't believe you. Sorry. I do not believe you. You did not do this unknowingly as an upstanding career FBI man. You stole an election. And I don't want to hear about, I was just trying to do my morals, and I'm so moral, and how could I know what a disaster? No, horse shit. You spent your whole life in this town. You spent your whole life watching how it works. You gave an election to a megalomaniac psychopath, and now you want us to feel bad for you. And my answer to you, sir, is go fuck yourself. Sorry.
Okay, well,
I'm not here for it. I don't believe it. I'm not interested in it. And frankly, if what you said at the beginning, which truth be told is what I was trying to get you to say, that there was supposed to be a point made here, I think it was an utter failure.
All right. I want to sort of just back up a second to speak to this. I mean, because to me, I sort of disagree in that. I think that, you know, I mean, look, and I'll grant you that a lot of the things that are said about Jim Comey are included in this because Jim Comey brought them up. like, there's no getting around that because it's, you know, it's based on this book. Based on, though, right? Like, this movie is not, Jim Comey didn't write this movie. You know what I mean? Like, someone wrote it based on the book that he wrote.
This movie takes Jim Comey's word for his inner dialogue. This movie trusts that Jim Comey is a good, upstanding, moral person. I don't believe it.
Mm. See, I think that all the stuff about him being bad at politics and not understanding that, and like doesn't that square with the Jim Comey that you've seen in public? Like, doesn't all of this, you know, I think he has spent some time to the best that he can in the maybe I just read Jim Comey more sympathetically than you
do. Yes, I think you're willing to give Jim Comey a sympathetic reading, and I am not. I'm sorry, I'm just not.
I'm not, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not, you know, I'm angry with what Jim Comey did.
But I know, but what I'm saying is, I don't. I mean, obviously he messed it up, but I think he did. Here's what I would say. Jim Comey is either a liar or so stupid and so clueless that I can't believe somebody that stupid and clueless could have ever gotten to the position of FBI director. So I'm forced to conclude he's a liar, because that tracks much more easily with career, you know, whatever you call it, career fed who becomes director of the FBI. I can track liar a lot easier than galactically stupid, because there's way it is not believable that a man who's been around the business of politics that long could think that this wouldn't simply hand the election to Donald Trump.
I don't think that, well, hold on. Not sure that Jim Comey has been around the business of politics that long, right? Keep in mind the part, like, I mean, I think you can at least agree that the parts about the FBI desperately trying to maintain its ideals as apolitical organization, that was true in 2016, right? Like, that's, that part of it is not made up. Forget about Comey, but the FBI not wanting to seem political was a real consideration for them, right? He's a career Justice Department dude, right?
Yes.
And all that stuff about Sally Yates and all that, right? Like, they all looked at themselves as above the fray, right? They're all people who served under Democrats and Republicans and voted however it is they voted, but, like, kept all of that aside. Like, do you think that that scene where he takes his daughter to vote and then doesn't vote, like, do you think that's on the level, right? That didn't happen, right? I think that's really who Jim Comey is. And there are many accounts that attest to that. Like, you don't have to just take Jim Comey's word for that. You know what I mean? And I would say, again, like, it squares with every bit of public testimony that we've seen from the guy.
There's a difference between, again, like, everything you just described is a description of a smooth operator who understands what he's doing. So then I have to believe that this smooth operator lost his brain for a month, behaved completely out of character and out of norm, and then was like, oops, how could I have known that would result in disaster? I don't believe it. I'm sorry. I do not believe it.
Okay.
They give you the facts that here we have two investigations. One is serious, the other is not. And he made a fucking scene of the unserious one. And lied to the public and deliberately concealed information. And it's exactly the same. The whole argument for talking about Hillary again was people have been given the wrong impression. And yet,
the argument was that it was going to leak anyway, which is correct.
No, that's not true.
It would have leaked. It would have leaked
moral
anyway.
The moral argument that Comey made was, I have misinformed them by telling them that the investigation against Hillary is closed.
Okay, so can we move off of this? Because you and I could literally argue about this for 4 years.
The problem here is I can't get past that. Jeff Daniels is perfectly good. The lady from...
let's talk about this as a movie. Forget the rest of it. Let's talk because that part of it I thought was excellent. I thought Jeff Daniels was incredible. To me, this is one of my favorite Jeff Daniels performances.
All right.
And I thought lots of other people were really good in it too, including the guy who plays Trump. Like, I think it's really difficult to do these roles of people that we kind of see in a TV show every day almost without doing mere impression. And I think Trump in particular, I think is that way. And yet I really feel like they got the essence of what it was like to deal with this guy and deal with this perspective of a guy who's demanding the complete opposite of what it is your core value to your organization is, and how you try to square that and like get along every day. And I thought the supporting people around him were incredible. It's definitely a cast of all-star that guys, you know, you see, you know, there are people we know like Steve Zissou and Stephen Pasquale or, you know, but most people I don't think are going to know.
No, I agree. I did not think Brendan Gleeson was especially good as Trump. I thought Jeff Daniels was good, not great, but I thought
this is an impression is Obama.
Oh, see, I feel the exact opposite way. That's young. So funny. I thought he was the best.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I that one didn't ring true for me at all.
Huh.
Even like Joe Latrullio as Jeff Sessions was great. You know, he's not in it a lot.
I mean, I don't know. I laughed at
that. I mean, our boy Scooter.
Scoot was great.
Always. You know what I mean? So.
Scoot McNairy was great. And I actually thought that was the best decision they made was to have Rod Rosenstein kind of tell the story. Like, yeah. I thought that was a really interesting way of doing it. The problem is, it was James Comey's words coming out of Rod Rosenstein's mouth for the most part. They just, like, had him say a couple of mean things about Comey to make it seem like it wasn't just Comey's words. I don't know. The whole endeavor to me is off. It's so funny. We had the exact opposite feeling about Trump and Obama as actors. Because to me, Brendan Gleeson... I just kept seeing like Brendan Gleeson in other roles, but doing a Trump impression, and the Obama guy who we've seen before, actually, in a couple of things. He was in Fleabag.
Lots of things. Fleabag. He was the boyfriend in High Fidelity.
Yeah. Yeah. I like him. And I thought he was really good. I thought it was toned down and less impressionistic than the Trump thing.
Oh, yeah. See, I thought it was pure like the Obama guy you hire for a party. Almost kind of performance, like the way just doing the voice and the manner, like I don't know, it's just for me it was I don't know, that one didn't work for me, and I think a lot of it has to do with just how young he is.
That's part of it. He did look too young, I'll give you that. But I the whole movie I was annoyed because I guess it sort of comes down to this for me. This felt to me like you were trying to make a point. And it felt to me like it was not a coincidence that it came out a month before the election. And it felt to me like, and I'm not mad at this.
Well, I mean, it's not a coincidence, but I don't think
I'm not mad at this.
I think that's about when are people going to be interested in it.
Okay. I'm not mad at this philosophically, but it felt like a liberal agenda, you know, like an agenda I'm down with. But it felt like, watch me so I can tell you how fucked up this was and how right-thinking liberal people should look at it. And I feel like your money would have been better spent on campaign contributions.
I think, see, because to me, I think the question about what becomes of our institutions when they're all sort of poisoned and politicized is interesting.
Yeah, it was interesting. By
the way,
6 years
Holly
ago.
In the really great performances. Yeah.
She's always great. 5 years ago, that would have been a fascinating film to explore. Now we know what happens. We just watched it, and it's
no, we
it's
don't.
This,
we
it's
don't
this
because,
effing guy's
because
fault.
There is going to because like Sally Yates says, there is going to be a point where Trump is not in the picture, right? You know, could be next week for all we know. We don't know what happens to these institutions after him, right? Are they truly resilient, and will they be restored as the poison, as the toxic element is removed, or have they been ruined? That to me is an interesting question. And I think posed it thoughtfully, and even more than that, to me, I just found it entertaining as an entertainment product, and that's the part I'm surprised that we are on opposite sides of.
Okay,
and maybe you're just like fuck you. Maybe you're just so like fuck this guy, which
that's
is
right.
not an unreasonable position.
No, that's exactly what it is.
My general position about him in the world. I'm not saying this meant like, hey, I'm a Comey guy now. I don't think I do think it's interesting to hear his side of the story, and I think that at least I can't speak for the book, which I'm going to guess is gibberish. But I think
here's the thing.
Story, as we're watching it, is probably well told.
Right. Well, except it's not a real story.
Whether it's true or not.
Right.
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, so
but
here's my thing.
We're watching a work of fiction.
You know how Stacey Dash isn't really attractive anymore?
I think I get where you're going with this.
Yeah, like, she's
you're not
the
talking
same...
about the ravages of time, I assume.
No, I'm not talking about time. I mean, like, by any, you know... deaf person's standard, she's still incredibly physically attractive. I am not attracted to her because I can't get past the dumb shit she says. Mm. So I don't know. I like, honestly, it's hard for me to respond to this movie as an entertainment product because all it did was piss me off.
Okay. Well, if it doesn't piss you off, I do think you enjoy it. It's not an unreasonable reaction that you were having to me, but I liked it. And
yeah, I didn't
agree with it necessarily, but I still liked the movie. So
I don't know. It feels to me like the message it attempts to send is very mixed because it trusts a person that has shown himself to be a not trustworthy.
Trust. I mean, I don't know. To me, I think if you just go into it as like, well, the narrator's a little unreliable here. I would say a little bit like, do you think he was lying about the family stuff? Like, I kind of think that's who he is in his family.
Here's what
life.
I think.
You know what I mean?
Here's what I think. What I think is if Donald Trump had been an ordinary shithead Republican president who just gerrymandered and deliberately persecuted people of color and actively fought against gender equality and installed homophobia into our system of government. If he was just that guy, we wouldn't have this because Jim Comey would be happily still working for him. And he would be proud, secretly proud, that he got him elected. So that...
Oh, I don't... Yeah,
I cannot
see,
get
yeah,
past
I
that.
I disagree with that.
He's
I don't think that's true.
Well, that's where we disagree, because
you don't think that Jim Comey, like, is and would be horrified by the person that Donald Trump is, and not because of political differences, because of character differences.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying if Donald Trump, instead of being Donald Trump, was Mike Pence, or, you know, whatever, ordinary Republican president who is, still a shithead by my judgment, Jim Comey would be thrilled.
I honestly don't think there's anything wrong with that because he was obviously happy to work for Obama.
No, you're missing my point. I'm not talking about happy to work. I'm talking about happy to have been the person who stole the election.
Oh, yeah, see,
I'm saying Jim Comey deliberately gave the Republicans an election. He didn't realize he gave the election to a psychopath, but he realized he was giving it to the Republicans, and he went ahead with it anyway. And to me, that invalidates everything he's saying, because he is conveniently tied, in my view, to his bipartisanship and apolitical nature.
I just look at him as a guy who made the wrong choice, who messed up with priorities. That the other thing that he was investigating was a much greater threat, and that by trying to protect that,
but he knew
screwed
that.
Up this election. I don't think
he.
Well, that
hold on, but he
really.
We can't do.
I really
this because...
don't think that this was a guy. That right. All right. Yeah, you're right. I don't even want to get into it because, like I said, I'm not here to judge Jim Comey. I'm here to judge this movie, which I really liked. And I legitimately thought when you were texting me, it was about how much you enjoyed it.
I'm here to judge Jim Comey.
Okay. I think you can dislike Jim Comey, which I generally do, and still like this movie.
That may well be possible, but I do think I have historically shown an inability to do the thing that you're talking about.
Okay, right. I didn't mean you as in Matt Kolsky. I mean
no, I know. That's why I'm saying. I think you're right that a person could enjoy this movie and still not like James Comey. I can't.
Yeah, and that's fine with me. That's fine with me. I'm surprised that you didn't like the movie parts of it as much as I did. But I get your Stacey Dash analogy. I did not. This was not a movie that I was looking forward to watching, to be honest. I kind of put it off till the end, and then found it really super duper watchable. So
here's another problem with it, really. If I could just on the way out throw one more parting shot, it's entirely too long.
I watched it all in one sitting.
It's 4 hours.
Yeah,
I can't believe that.
But really liked it. Yeah,
I can't
really liked
that.
It. All right, let's move on to some other stuff that I have a feeling that we probably will be more simpatico on. How about Fargo? New season of Fargo.
Great. I've only watched 2, so no spoilers from episode 3. I did not realize that there were going to be 2 the first week, so it I fell behind. But
yeah. And they're not too mini episodes either.
No.
I mean, Fargo has pretty much been long now for a while. So, as I think pretty much anything Noah Hawley does seems to can't really do an hour episode anymore. So not a surprise, but yeah, 2 episodes back to back is about 3 hours of television with him.
It is.
So,
I mean, look, at this point, what are we, season 4? This shouldn't impress me anymore, but I continue to be endlessly impressed with the way that he has captured the Coen brothery spirit of Fargo and distributed it to all these different stories. I just love it.
Yeah, I just love it too. And I would say, I mean, I think maybe I'm a little less excited about it than you in that my feeling, like my headline of it is, it's still Fargo. Like it's all those things that you're getting. You're getting the Midwestern setup.
Yes.
With the, you have quirky, probably murderous people. You get sort of the.
But funny.
Long monologues. Yeah. Like the wry sense of humor, really a sort of a keen understanding of the sensibilities, a little bit of a history lesson thrown in, and then just some total non sequitur-y kind of, just some weirdness. There's a little bit of weirdness in the stew. All of that is still there. It's great.
And
I would say, particularly if you're talking about the first 2 episodes, that this show is still in second gear though.
Uh-huh.
Like it hasn't really taken off yet. You know what I mean? The first episode is particularly a lot of exposition.
It's a lot of background, but
it's interesting exposition, but we're not anywhere near peak Fargo or what this show hopefully will be.
No, but isn't that also something we've come to expect from Noah Hawley, that like the build is slow, but worth it?
Yeah, no, I fully expect it to be worth it, but we're just talking about what we've seen so far, right?
No, I agree. I'm just saying it. Yeah, no, that's true, but it's like I like that feeling. It's not the Perry Mason like why am you wasting my time feeling. It's the ooh, like something is building feeling, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
and, I would agree with that.
And Chris Rock is pretty straight through the first 2 episodes, but there are a ton of exceptional delightful acting performances, starting with our new friend from the Charlie Kaufman movie, whose name I'm forgetting already.
yeah, she's great.
She is so much fun, and she is really the, you know, Jessie Buckley is her name, and she's really like the avatar for Midwestern politeness, but also being crazy.
Yeah, she is Minnesota nice, where it's
right,
exactly a veneer masking something else. And
yeah, I mean
she,
that's
you know
yeah, it's Midwest nice is what we call it in Chicago. It's something that my wife worked for a big company in Madison, Wisconsin, and their CEO at the like hello, you know, this is like a multi thousands of people company software deal. And the CEO gives like a big speech where she talks about Midwest nice to try to like break people of it so they can do their jobs properly.
Yeah, because it's not real direct.
No.
It kind of gets in the way.
It's exactly. It makes it impossible to get anything done. So she like gives this whole talk that like here at Epic, like we don't have time for your Midwest nice nonsense, basically.
In this case, though, it's not masking like passive aggressiveness.
No.
It seems to be masking psychotic rage of some kind.
Yes, something psychotic. And again, like that's why I like the slow build of something like this when it's done well, is because I have so many questions about her character, and you know, it's slowly being revealed to us.
Yeah. I think Jason Schwartzman, I mean, he's mostly doing Jason Schwartzman, but it's perfect.
It's perfect.
Here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, and that's what I mean. Everybody here. Ben Whishaw, Chris Rock, and again, Chris Rock hasn't done a lot. Did you realize who the dad is? Like
isn't
the
that
dad
the guy who's Chris Rock's dad? Or
no. No, well that Dr. Senator, no, he's great. No, I'm talking about the girl, like the lead girl.
The funeral, the mortician guy.
Yes. Do you know who that is?
No.
It's Andrew Bird.
Oh, the musician Andrew Bird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His acting debut.
I wonder if, because, you know, he's like a world champion whistler. I wonder if that's going to be deployed at some point.
A world champion whistler, multi-instrumentalist genius. I don't love his music, but he's an incredibly talented guy.
He's got a couple good songs.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. No, I'm not saying he's bad. He's good, but he's not really my jam for the most part, but he's incredibly talented. And
wasn't he also like in the Scroll Nut Zippers at some point?
Yes, he was.
I think that's true. Yes.
That's correct. And he's I think he's quite good in this show.
I do too. I do too. The cast is great. I really like that Chris Rock is not in a chewing scenery role.
Yeah, I like Chris Rock just playing a straight man. I've, as I said, only watched two episodes, so Timothy Oliphant just showed up, which is exciting. I don't know. There's a lot to like here, and I have full
it's exciting,
trust.
But he's also doing. I mean, he's doing a little bit of Raylan Givens in at least in the one episode that we've seen him in to this point. So
oh yeah, see, I didn't see it. He literally just jumped on screen in the last 30 seconds of episode two, so that's all I've seen.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Maybe I'm getting parts confused. So you haven't seen him in the office with the local sheriff yet.
No, you're thinking of episode three, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, Glenn Turman, who plays Dr. Senator, which is hilarious. there's just, you know, it's a lot of good stuff.
It is a lot of good stuff. I just realized that there are four episodes, aren't there? That's why I'm really confused about where you are.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even realize. So it's two a week, I guess.
No. It was two the first night and then one after that. But there was one that aired last night. You didn't watch that, I'm going to guess.
No, we've only had two.
Right?
It didn't come out before our last podcast.
No, it's one aired on Sunday. Sorry.
But that would only be three. There have only been 2 weeks of Fargo.
All right. Well, I've watched all of it. So I don't know where you're at.
Yeah. that's my bad. I'm two episodes behind. It's, yeah, I guess. Oh, no, it must have already. I'm so confused. This says
I'm
episode
looking it up now.
It says online episode four doesn't come out till October 11th.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So there's only three.
So we're both right.
So that's weird. Because I've definitely watched a scene and I didn't think it was in the most recent episode.
I think it was because.
So you're doing Raylan Givens.
I'm pretty sure Raylan Givens has not showed up yet, other than in the car. He's sitting there in the car at the end of episode two. And he, like, the cops are about to knock the door down.
Okay. Well, he's a U.S. Marshal. I'll put it that way.
Yes, that I had sorted out. I understand what he's doing and what's happening, but I just haven't seen him chew the scenery yet. But that's exciting. I like Timothy Oliphant doing that.
Yeah. Can I ask about the one guy who I'm a little iffy on? And I can't tell if it's because he's not doing a good job or because he's doing such a good job that as a heel that I don't really
like
him.
Is it the brother?
But, yeah.
Yeah. He's very over the top.
I feel like he is doing Vincent D'Onofrio in Full Metal Jacket, but Italian. Am I off on that?
Yeah, I think you're off on that.
It's like he's got this weird crazy-eyed stare all the time.
He does the crazy-eyed stare, but it's like a... I see it more as like a cartoonish, you know, Italian gangster than a, like, disturbed... You know what I mean? Like, Vincent D'Onofrio is vulnerable in his psychopathy.
Yeah, sorry. I should say Vincent D'Onofrio at the point where after he's been beaten. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Once he's fully lost it.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, but he's pretty under control, the guy in Fargo. Like, it's a controlled crazy eyes. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I don't know. I think maybe cartoonish is maybe the better way to put it.
It is definitely cartoonish.
Feels a little over the top to me.
It is, but that to me, you know, so is Jason Schwartzman in his own way. Like, I'm sure Timothy Oliphant is over the top in his own way. I think that's part of the vibe here, right? Jesse Buckley, as goofy and delightful as she is definitely over the top.
Yes, yes. No, I agree. Well, there's something, that's what I mean. There's something about the way that those people are doing it that works for me, whereas as this guy doesn't, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
By the way, Jesse Buckley's character is named Orietta Mayflower, which is also pretty delightful as the weird names on the show go.
And she talks about herself in the third person all the time. I mean, she's just fantastic. She really, I don't know if I've ever fallen in love with like someone's acting so quickly as, you know, one movie and two episodes of TV, but I just think she's wonderful.
Well, those are two pretty gonzo performances.
Gonzo,
and they're very different.
That's right. That's what I was going to say. Not just are they interesting and deep performances, they are totally different.
Yeah. So anyway, look, we are both, I think, in the tank for Fargo as an enterprise.
Yes.
But if you have liked these seasons before, I think you just have to be super excited that this season is happening.
Correct. No reason you wouldn't love it.
I do actually want to just veer from this and actually sort of tangent for a minute to just sort of say, like, you know, in this weird ass time in the world that we're in, appreciate the shows that you love because they're starting to get just taken from us at random. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Glow.
Including the Glow thing yesterday, the Glow news yesterday really bummed me out, particularly because that was... That was a show that I had already been renewed.
I know.
And so, look, the thing that Netflix said is that it's a super hard show to do in the coronavirus time because it's about wrestling,
right?
And it is a super large cast
and physical,
so it's just hard to do socially distanced. And expensive, and it was kind of a show that I think was sort of barely renewed as it was.
Yeah, I don't get it.
I would say the counterpoint to that, and I'll credit Andy Greenwald on Twitter with this, is that, you know, Netflix is making a boatload of money during the pandemic. They're one of the few people that this has been really good for. So, you know, maybe you could just hold it for a little while. I'm sure that gets into contracts and stuff like this, because obviously a lot of those people on that show have other offers to do other things. But
that's a show that is a champion for women, for people of color, for sort of like counterculturalists. And it's so well made and so well acted and so clever and original. It just sucks. Like, if you can't eat a few months of money on that show, what are we doing here?
Yeah. I mean, I agree with that. And I would say even beyond that, it's just a show that deserves a real ending.
Yes.
Yeah.
And wasn't this already...
the part that really upsets me.
I think they'd already said this was going to be the last season. So, like, come on, guys.
Yeah. You know, or I would say this at the very least, give us a movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
Give me a movie and we can wrap it up.
You can't convince me that it's cost prohibitive to make it safe for two more hours of GLOW. Like, yeah. I don't know. It's a bummer.
I agree with that. And I don't really understand, you know, because the whole point of Netflix was supposed to be volume, and we're going to be able to tell a lot of these stories that are a little bit quirkier. And if it's not going to be that, if it's going to have to be like lots of people are watching this to keep it going, then the quality of Netflix is going to suffer. Like, they should be trying to provide television experiences at every level. They should be giving us now I'm forgetting the name of the damn show, Love is Blind, on the one hand, and shows like this on the other.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
With random teenage dramas in the middle, and you know what I mean, like, that's it's the whole point is to be all of it, right? So,
totally agreed. Slight non sequitur. The wife and I have been watching season 3 of Love Island UK because we were told it was a particularly good season. And by the way, that is true. Strong recommend. You're never going to believe who just showed up. And he hasn't been in an episode yet. He just literally just showed up at the end of an episode, essentially. I'll give you 3 guesses before I give you a hint that's going to give it away. But I'm going to tell you, if you think about your reality knowledge, even though I don't think you know this, you may be able to guess it. Who do you think just showed up on Love Island UK season 3?
I'm going to take a cue from the excitement in your voice and say Kyle.
Incorrect, but you're on the right track.
So is it somebody from the challenge?
I'm not giving you your hint UK? Until you burn your three until you burn 3 guesses.
All right, well then I'm gonna roll with this is a little off of beam path, but and maybe you wouldn't be quite as excited. I'm gonna roll with Joss. How's that?
Nope. Last one before your hint.
Melissa?
No, this hint is totally going to give it away.
Okay.
His depth perception today is not what it was when he made this appearance on Love
Theo!
Island. Yes!
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, that's...
Theo has just showed up to Love Island. And I don't think, like, when he was introduced to the challenge, he was from Love Island. So this must be before he went on, like, Big Brother or one of those Jordy Shore shows or something like that.
I feel like, honestly, that I have heard that he was on Love Island, and maybe it was that's how he was introduced to the challenge. I'm not sure, but I feel like I have actually heard this now that you have mentioned it.
So. Well, I'm very excited to see what he does on Love Island. And you're right, actually. I just looked it up. Love Island UK was the original series he was on, so he went straight. Did anyone else go from Love Island to the challenge?
I don't think so. I think everybody else was from an MTV property.
Right. All right. Well, there you go. So I'll let you know. I'll update you on how Theo does. But
I'm 100% sure he's going to be great, which is how he got to the challenge in the first place.
Right.
I guess
he has to be.
And also,
like,
I mean, we've seen him. He's a dick.
Yes.
He's a handsome dick. It'll be perfect.
That'll be perfect. But I got to tell you, like, I can't. Seriously, season 3 of Love Island UK is peak. You know, idiots in bathing suits reality show. Just absolutely tops.
All right. You know, maybe when the NBA is done.
Yeah.
There's the sports calendar is a little bit, my nights have been full.
Yes, for sure. And it's, look, it's like, it's, there's like 55 episodes of it, and you know, it's crazy, but I'm just, I'm telling you, the characters, the love twists, this show is, I have to believe that Love Island UK season 3 is the reason this show is now everywhere.
I could see that. I bet. I forgot, now that you mentioned it, exactly how much television a Love Island season is. It is so much.
But you will get sucked into this, and you can. It can be the thing you watch in like your brain dead moments for 6 months. You know, it's not bad.
Also, I'm embarrassed to admit this, but you know, there's a supposedly Gonzo Bachelorette season that's about to start here.
What does that mean? What is a Gonzo Bachelorette season?
One bachelor, the bachelorette quits halfway through, supposedly.
Oh yeah, that's right. Like, then they hire a black girl, like, right?
Yeah, exactly. So I want to see what that's about.
All right. You let me know. Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and skip it. You just let me know how it goes.
All right. And by the way, not just a black girl, like Keisha's awesome. She's good. one of the better bachelorette characters.
Yeah,
of the
years or so. I only said they hire a black girl because it's the second time in the history of the series that that's happened. So it seems like a big deal.
Yes. Yeah. You know, the next bachelor is black too, which is, you know,
that's the first time, right?
The very first time. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
diversity.
You know
why I know that?
It's all way too late, so I'm not giving them an attaboy.
No, they don't get like, credit. But do you know why I know that?
Because it made news? Because it never happened before?
No, because of my new favorite podcast other than the Toy Department.
Which one is that?
It's Higher Learning with Van Lathan and Rachel Lindsay.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm imagining they covered it in depth.
Yeah, well, they're really funny because Van really had ever seen The Bachelor or The Bachelorette before and is co-hosting now with Rachel Lindsay, and so is very funny about becoming part of the Bachelor world. And she is very outspoken. Like, just shout out Rachel Lindsay, who has taken, at least now, despite the fact that she's on Extra TV and like a representative of Bachelor Nation, is very outspoken and totally unwilling to compromise her ideals, and good for her.
She is tremendous. Yes. I'd say hands down my favorite bachelorette to date. I'm not surprised that she's very good on a podcast.
Is it fair or unfair for me to say that Rachel Lindsay is simply a higher class of human than the bachelor or the bachelorette usually are willing to deal with?
Yeah, I would say not in like an unprecedented way. There are other people. Mm-hmm. Who I think you could put in that class, but she's definitely on the high end of the scale, and certainly on the high end of the scale in terms of accomplished people in life.
Yes,
before they are made the bachelor or bachelorette.
Yeah, man.
In the beginning, it used to be all about a little bit like what you did in life, and then that stopped pretty quickly.
Yeah, that makes sense. Anyway, she's great. Higher Learning is a great podcast. Would recommend.
That's one of those I've been meaning to check out, but my podcast diet is also pretty full. So.
Yeah, no, me too. But I have learned that listening to that podcast is a much better way for me to process the news than actually reading the news, because they present to me the news with a perspective I can understand, identify with, and not think is totally morally bankrupt. So
I'm starting to discover your podcast diet really needs to be manicured and maintained. Like, you shouldn't keep listening to the same podcast you've always been listening to without assumption.
No, for sure. You know? I have real, like, I, mine changes pretty regularly these days.
Yeah. I'm just kind of just jumping into that. So, all right, we've got to cover.
Say that again.
Yeah, we got one more show to cover.
One more show, yes.
That is Utopia. This, for me, Utopia is, by the way, I guess, if you didn't watch it, the story of four comic book nerds whose love for this super culty comic and its you know, long lost sequel.
Well, and,
puts them in the middle of a series of wild and crazy events.
Yeah, and you know, a comic book that is appreciated by one group of people as a comic book and by another as like a prescient pandemic predictor. Ooh, that's good.
Yeah.
Did they use that in any of the promotional materials? Alliteration? I nailed that.
They did not. It's written by Gillian Flynn, by the way, this show. I think I said that name right, who I believe wrote Gone Girl, if not mistaken. Some
I believe
other
that is
so,
correct, yes.
Yeah. This show was a total surprise and delight to me. I have found it super engrossing. I don't know how many you watched.
Yeah. She also wrote Sharp Objects.
Sharp Objects. Yeah. But I am I'm very into it. And I'm it's one of those things that I'm kind of rolling to when I'm like, oh, let me watch something fun.
Yeah, so. She's also a Northwestern grad. Shout out Evanston, Illinois. I guess there's not magic really. I wasn't sure how you were going to react to this because it is a little. It's not magic, I guess, but it definitely is like pushing into the realm of surrealism that I wasn't sure how annoyed you'd get with it. But for me, I watch more of this than of anything else this week. I'm like 5 or 6 episodes into an 8-episode series.
Yeah, so we're about the same place, I'd say.
I just think it's so watchable. I think the sort of mystery of it is so compelling. And it's just – you know what it reminds me of a little bit is – I can't think of it now. I want to say Postcards from the Edge, but it was not called that. The Jason Segel show we just watched.
What is the name of that show? In Philadelphia with all. I mean, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Dispatches from Elsewhere, Postcards from the Edge. Of course, you know, I wasn't so wrong. Postcards from the Edge, Dispatches from Elsewhere. Anyway,
don't get old, people. This seriously. Is like I used to be encyclopedic about the names of television shows, and now I can't remember things that I liked 6 months ago.
I don't know if that's our fault or TV's fault for doing too much, though.
Yeah.
Anyway,
it's possible. It's both.
It reminds me a little bit of that because it has this surrealism, this sort of story within a story. What's happening here? A mystery. And it's very the characters are very odd, and there are moments of hilarious comedy, but they're not divorced from the moments of like terror and sadness. It's a really intricate show emotionally, and it's really original. So I'm very excited. And I also, other than John Cusack and Rainn Wilson, who are sort of confined to almost their own like bottle part of the story.
Yeah, although I think these parts of the story are coming together at some point. Yeah,
for sure. Yeah. But like, other than those two guys, this is largely a cast of unknowns or barely knowns and Desmond Borges. And I just think everyone is really good.
Me too. Dan Byrd, you've probably seen a lot of things, particularly if you watch like Cougar Town.
I did not watch Cougar Town.
Cougar Town's kind of good, man.
Oh, yeah? Isn't that Courtney Love?
Courtney Cox.
That's what I meant.
But yeah, it's from the same.
Oh, okay. The guy. It's the guy from Easy A.
He was in that too. He's been something. You've seen him around.
Yeah. I mean, I think I've seen most of these people, but very few big names in like the core cast, and I think some really good performances, particularly what's her face, Jessica Hyde. I think that woman is giving an excellent performance.
I don't even know the guy's name, but you know, the murdering guy.
Yes.
He's
so good. He is so good.
I don't know that his name is ever really said.
Arby. Well, his name's Arby, but it's not his real name.
Okay. Gotcha. Christopher Denham is the actor that plays him apparently. And he's, I feel like a guy that I've seen and stuff.
Definitely. Yeah.
But yeah. He's tremendous.
No, wait. Hold on. Did you know this was a? Did you know this was a British show?
I did not. No.
Huh. They've already. So this show.
Yeah, adapted from a 2013 British original.
Yeah, okay. So I looked up Arby from Utopia, and I got the British guy.
Gotcha.
But, yeah, that dude is very good.
I'll give you a little more piece of Utopia trivia. The original version of this was supposed to air on HBO and was going to be directed by David Fincher.
Whoa.
Yeah, which would have been nuts.
And that would have been intense.
Gone Girl.
Interesting. But anyway, the guy who plays the part you're talking
David
about.
Fincher, this version of the show would have been wild.
Yeah. That guy was in Argo. He's been in a ton of TV. He was in Shutter Island. So you've seen him before.
Yeah. Anyway, I found the show really watchable. I haven't honestly heard a lot of buzz about it.
Neither have I.
Seems like I'm maybe flying under the radar, but I recommend it. And I'm not necessarily the kind of person that likes this kind of show. So.
Agreed. Yeah. No, I think the fact that you liked it is a big endorsement. And also, you know, the fact that we both, I don't know about you, I shouldn't say this, but I know I watched it. It's a show about a pandemic in the middle of a pandemic, and that didn't bother me at all.
Yeah, me neither. I wouldn't say it's a show about a pandemic. It's a show where there's a pandemic happening.
But a massive, deadly pandemic that you'd think would, like, especially, I'm the guy who couldn't watch James Comey because I was so pissed off. You'd think this would be, like, unpleasant, but I didn't find it to be that at all.
Yeah, I mean,
I think that's an achievement is all I'm saying.
I would say it is a little unpleasant, but I think it's, you know, it's trying to be.
Well,
you know,
no. The show has unpleasant moments. I'm just saying I didn't find myself thinking about, like, God, this is awful because we're actually living a pandemic right now. Like, yeah. I didn't get bogged down in that, which I think means the show is really good.
It's really good and very bingeable. Like, I was not sitting out to watch as many of them as I did. I just liked it, and it's easier to roll from one to the next. So.
Yeah, no, at one point in the week, I stopped myself from watching another one because I was like, there aren't enough of these. I need to slow down.
That's a great sign. I feel like that's the sign of respect when you're like holding a few back because you don't want it to end.
Yes,
you know?
I think that is the best compliment you can give to a bingeable TV show is like, I had to actively stop myself from continuing because I want more later.
Yeah, agreed with that. So, so yeah. All right. Well, it's good. I liked that we had some agrees and a couple of hard disagrees.
This was a good one. Hey, two minutes on sports.
Okay.
NBA Finals. Jimmy Butler was incredible. It's 2-1 now. Do the Heat have any chance?
Look, the Lakers have laid one egg in every one of these rounds. And I have been fooled by a couple of these eggs in the past, and I feel like I'm not getting fooled by this again. I kind of think the answer is no.
Oh, sorry.
Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me. Won't get fooled again. Look, here's the thing, right? The case for the Heat coming into this that we were talking about was sort of the case that I spectacularly tried and failed to make for the Denver Nuggets, which is like, okay, you know, players 1 and 2 are clearly on the Lakers, but, you know, maybe 3 through 9 are on the Heat. And it just hasn't been like that. And I'm not even really talking about the absence of Ban and Gorin, although those are big factors. Duncan Robinson.
Terrible.
Jay Crowder and Tyler Hero have been poor. And,
Crowder has mostly been Jay Crowder. The problem is Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero have been poor, and I think that is explained by the absence of Dragic and Bam. Because guys are not at a point in their careers where they can hold up to the level of scrutiny they get as the second and third scoring options on a team in the finals. Right.
Yeah. And he always played good in stretches, but I think.
Yeah, because he's an incredible talent and he can get hot. Yeah. And I love Hero, but he's not ready to be number 2 in the finals. He's ready to be number 4 in the finals. And that's what he was until the number 2 and 3 got hurt. And look, people can talk about Bam being the Heat's best player. I feel like you should know that's horseshit after watching Jimmy Butler the other day. But if you want to still say that, fine. Even if it's 1 and 3, you know, the first and third best players on the team that you lost. Like, you're not beating the Lakers. That so we agree there. Football.
My favorite tweet, by the way, I retweeted this from a guy named Owen Ellickson, who's a comedy writer.
Yes.
Like, Jimmy Butler just beat the Lakers with Jay Crowder on Vampire Weekend.
That's very good.
That's perfect. So, I'm not saying the Heat can't win if Bam comes back and those guys play the way that they're capable of and they have the fight and the snarl. But I think that you are getting an A effort from Bron and Davis tonight, and good luck to you.
Yeah. They're in trouble. Right, NFL, next. Anything interesting?
I mean, look, I think that, you know, the most interesting thing is COVID, right?
Yep.
Like, you know, like I'm not sure that the league is fully prepared.
I'm sure they're not. It doesn't mean they can't pull this off, but I'm sure they're not fully prepared. They have made that very clear.
Yeah. And I think there's going to be more times where somebody's quarterback gets it the day before a game, you know, and said team is screwed.
And watching that game, that's a very competitive game if Cam Newton's playing.
Yeah, most likely.
So
do you buy the argument or not the argument, but the notion that you know, the injuries are out of control this year? I feel like it's just sort of the normal injury variance of a football season to me.
It's very hard for me to answer that intelligently, just because the team I cover, there's no question the injuries have been extraordinary.
Yeah.
So it feels
some team the injuries, right? Every year that happens to some team, doesn't it?
Yes and no. I mean, yes, but even in a normal year, what's happening to the Niners is pretty extreme. They've lost,
and they're certainly not the only team, right? They just played a team that was having pretty.
I know the Eagles, yeah, very similar. But
my team is, the defense has been destroyed by injuries as well.
Just the Niners, just quickly, the Niners played this week without their top quarterback, without one of their, in theory, top three wide receivers, without their top four corners, and without one of their top three linebackers. And did I already say four defensive linemen are on IR? Oh, and their top two running backs. Like, that is extraordinary. You know, I don't know. It does feel to me like there are more injuries, but it's hard for me to say. Like, I'd have to look at data to know if that's just bias or reality.
Yeah. I would say it's probably on the high end, but I think to take any next step of like, oh, this is the result of not having a preseason or anything, like, you know what I mean? Applying any causality to that, even if the injuries are more than they normally are.
Well, you know what's interesting?
I think is real tricky.
It is very tricky, but I do think this is the one point I've heard that makes sense to me and is kind of interesting on that topic. People have noted, and I believe this is supported by data, that the second preseason game is often where you get a series of big injuries. And we've had football players on the show say that the reason that happens is you have the whole offseason, you go into preseason game number one, you're hitting for the first time in months, you know, real hitting, but your body came in feeling so fresh that you usually handle it pretty well. It's that first week where you have to bounce back in 7 days, or for some teams less than 7 days, to go hit people again where you're in danger. So yeah. I do think maybe the first four games of the regular season had more injuries than the first four games of the regular season ordinarily do, because you basically got all the injuries that would normally happen in preseason happening there.
Right. And when you're going back to your team, you know, they also played games 2 and 3 on a turf that they said was super duper messed up.
Yeah, for the Niners.
Probably didn't help.
Yeah, that's true. Yep.
If you're looking at the season, like, writ large, it doesn't feel like they're, you know, look, let's put KC and Baltimore aside.
Yep.
And I guess you can maybe throw Green Bay into that mix.
I don't think so.
Not a lot of great teams. Not a lot of very good teams.
I think Green Bay scares you because of Aaron Rodgers. And because of Aaron Rodgers, they are maybe as dangerous as anyone in like a one game scenario. So they
I would say Aaron Rodgers plus a run game.
Yeah, yeah. I really the like offense the way they're in calling general. Plays. Yeah, the offense yeah. in general run by an Aaron Rodgers who appears determined to shove it directly up everybody's ass.
Yeah.
But I can't shake how badly they got beat by the Niners last year out of my head. And I'm still not impressed with that defense. Like the Saints had pretty good success, and I'm not super impressed with them. So I don't think you can put Green Bay might be the best team in the NFC, but I don't think you can put them or Seattle on the level of Kansas City or even Baltimore. And frankly,
yeah, Seattle's defense is truly unimpressive.
Exactly. Exactly. So to me, Kansas City is on their own. Baltimore is on their own in second, and then it's a mess. And I think that is partially because of COVID, and I think that actually, look, that's what we like in the NFL. We like the messiness. We like sort of not knowing who's going to win. It's the whole deal.
I'm not currently a fan of the messiness, personally.
No? Is that just because your team is the messiest of all the messes?
Just because my team is the messiest, yeah.
They are filthy messy. There's no question about
that. I really hate having to have kind of turned into, oh, well, like, all right, I guess I'm just playing fantasy
yep.
for the rest of the year.
Hey, here's the good news.
It's terrible.
Here's the good news. I think your coach is about to get fired.
Please let it be. I'm not a person who likes to wish for people's jobs. By all accounts, Dan Quinn seems like a pretty good human being.
Nah,
like
he's
I
had
don't,
chances.
You know.
He's had his chances.
But come on,
it's enough already.
Like this is a mess, and it's been an ongoing mess for several years. And I feel like it's an indictment of the organization as a whole that they haven't made that move yet. So, I was hoping for a Lane Kiffin style Tarbeck firing last night, but
yeah,
that's not really the way the Falcons do business. So
no, I mean, it might so even we'll be see. At the end of the year based on the way Arthur Blank likes to handle himself. But I'm confident the Dan Quinn era will not see 2021.
I'm legit scared that they figure out some way to go 8-8, and he's still here next year somehow.
Oh boy, yeah, I mean. I don't know how you can do that and keep any credibility.
Yeah, we'll see.
Look, that offense is still as talented as almost any offense in the league. So, you know, they're not so
yeah.
far from being a good team, strangely
but
enough.
But the defense, I mean, like,
well, and that's why
the problem is, like, the roster construction is so tilted to one side of the ball.
Yeah, that, they went you know, a like, little too hard on the idea – and I think this works better for offensive coaches, head coaches. But I think some people put together a team with the concept of whatever the head coach's strength is, we need less talent for that, right? And I think that's what they've done here. Well, Dan Quinn's a defensive guru, so we'll put all the talent on offense and let him coach the defense up, and it just hasn't worked.
Right. And they had the run to the Super Bowl, like the defense was good for the last 8 to 10 games
but
of that year.
Yeah.
And that's the only time it's been good in his entire tenure.
And even then, it
and
wasn't
other than
great.
That's been horrible. Yeah. So it's been good. That's
yeah.
it. That's
then
the,
it was
that's it.
What it was good enough that
good enough.
The best
yes.
offense ever could get you to the Super Bowl.
Right. You know what I mean? And that's yeah. the thing is, like, and they don't have the best offense ever at
no.
this point. It probably underplays the talent. It's not coordinated very well.
Nope.
Like they need a real good, there's organizational problems there. And
they
that's
have
the
not
reason
replaced,
why they're 0-4.
They have not replaced Kyle Shanahan.
Yeah.
Which
you know, and
seems
I can,
like a problem since Kyle Shanahan's been the head coach of the Niners for 4 years.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right.
All right.
That's enough Falcon talk. People don't care.
Let's
so,
do homework.
Let's do homework. There's a lot of stuff to watch this week. I Whew. Hope that we can find the time.
Where does the time go?
So you, like me, have been seeing ads for the good Lord Bird with Ethan Hawke just, going ham.
Strangely, I think I am all in on any Ethan Hawke project sight unseen. But I have seen these previews, and I am excited.
Yeah, I don't even think it's that strange at this point. Like, he's been crushing it for
yeah,
a couple years now.
He's just really good and more than good selective.
Yes. Yeah, I would agree with that. I'm also excited for Charm City Kings, which I've also seen a few ads for, which is kind of HBO Max's, I guess, first real big original movie. It's a story of a kid in Baltimore. Meek Mill is one of the stars.
Yeah. Meek Mill seems to be like a maybe like a gangster mentor of some kind.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think that's sort of the vibe.
Yeah, this looks like a pretty big shot to me. I guess maybe not that big if Meek Mill is in a starring role, but it looks like they're really trying to do something here. I'm excited to see if they pull it off.
I believe the Smiths, of Will Smith and Jada Pinkett, I think, are involved in the production of this movie. They're not in it or anything, but yeah, there you go. And then I should mention, Good Lord Bird has already aired at least one episode, right? So
yeah, but I think it's week to week.
Yeah. Also, a show that has already started airing that we want to check out on AMC is called Soulmates.
Yeah.
It's an anthology series that we don't know a ton about, but kind of looked interesting. So,
I think it just aired last night, or maybe even premieres tonight. No, last night, I think.
Last night, yeah. Yeah. It's from one of the writers of Black Mirror. Malin Ackerman's in an episode. And,
yep.
It looks interesting. So we'll check that out. There's an Amazon movie called 40-Year-Old Virgin. I think it's Amazon. Maybe it's Netflix. I don't know.
You said Netflix earlier.
If I said Netflix earlier, that's correct, because I was definitely reading that at the time. That is about
It's Netflix.
A playwright who turns rapper at age 40.
Writer director Rada Blank stars as a woman who changes from playwright to rapper.
Yeah, it's supposed to be good. And then we wanted to throw the Comedy Store documentary on Showtime in that as well, right?
Yes. I, for one, am very excited about this. I think the first episode features Marc Maron, among others. And the Comedy Store, for stand-up comedy fans, the Comedy Store is a mythical, fascinating, somewhat demonic place. Have you ever been to the Comedy Store?
It depends on what you mean by two.
Have you been inside?
No. I have walked on the sidewalk of it many times.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's right there on, what, Melrose?
It's on Sunset, I believe.
Sunset, I get L.A. confused. But it is one of those places, I don't know why, but the thing that jumped into my mind to compare it to is Wrigley Field. It's one of those places where you walk in the door and the history, like, weighs on you. You just feel it. You know? Like, part of it is the pictures on the wall and knowing some of the incredible people who got their start there and played big sets there. But there's just something about the space that, like, the air is heavy with history. It's a really cool building.
Yes, I would agree with that. And this is also, that's the one that Pauly Shore's mom ran.
Yep, Mitzi Shore.
Correct?
Yep.
Yeah. So yeah, I think you know, we like comedy, and so I think that'd be interesting. I thought it was a movie, so it's multiple episodes.
Yeah, I believe it is a series. Yes.
Gotcha. All right. Well, we will check that out. Showtime's been kind of into this history of comedy thing, I feel like, lately. I am mad at it.
Yeah, a cool lane for Showtime to go after, I think.
I agree. I think Showtime's made some interesting choices the last couple of years.
Yeah, because we talked a lot about how for a while they were sort of like the home for non-prestige television. Like, enjoyable, bingeable, but not that deep, but expensive and look good and expensive actors stuff.
Yeah.
And I feel like they maybe realized that that's not actually a lane. Because, like, people either want the really high-level stuff, or they don't care that much that the production values are good. So I think, like, trying to pursue, they're doing a lot of, like, recent history, like the Comey thing. They're doing a lot of comedy-based stuff, like history of comedy. I think they are finding niches for their content to sort of squeeze in between HBO and the streamers.
Yeah. By the way, have you been watching The Vow on HBO at all?
No, I can't pull the trigger on another death goal.
Okay.
Or sex cult or whatever they are.
Yeah, it's a little more of a sex cult than a death cult, but
yeah. Too many cults.
Yeah. All right. Well, I have been watching it. I have a lot of thoughts, but I have people I can share those with offline. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, Derek Madden's podcast about the sex cult begins in 5 minutes on his telephone with somebody else.
Maybe we'll make it available for Patreon members.
There you go. There you go. Is that it? Is that all the homework?
That is a nice full slate.
All right.
There's a lot of stuff happening.
Okay. Bye. All
right, I'm going to watch playoff baseball.
Okay, watch playoff baseball.
All right. I'm doing that. All right, bye.
I already said bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.